as we are talking with Myron Miller. He is the fleet superintendent for the city of Galesburg. Takes care of maintenance and repair on any and all vehicles or any piece of equipment that has a motor or engine. He takes care of it from a weed whacker to a fire truck to a snowplow, whatever the case may be. So got to know something about automobiles to be able to do that. So we're talking car maintenance, winter car maintenance here. And before the break, you had mentioned something we've talked about, I think, just about every time, and that is your coolant or antifreeze coolant, whatever you want to call it. Is antifreeze a word still used?
It is. It is. I mean, it's still called antifreeze, but it confuses people, and we've talked about this before, because it's known as antifreeze. Way back when, its idea was to keep it from being frozen in the winter, and so you couldn't use straight water. In today's vehicles, well, actually over the last 35 years, it's as responsible and actually more responsible in the summer than it is in the winter in dissipating heat out of the engine. So therefore, it's been kind of referred to over the last 20 years maybe as coolant because of its need to dissipate heat from the engine.
And I suppose even in, you know, on a 0-degree day, it still needs to, I mean, the engine's going to get hot no matter, so it still needs to dissipate the heat.
It
no
does,
matter.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously will take longer period of time. And most vehicles have a nominal or an optimal normal operating range of about 205 degrees. So you see thermostats that open traditionally at about 198 degrees, and the engine will get a little bit warmer than that, but it allows the engine to run somewhere between 198 to 205 degrees is about where most manufacturers want to see their cars run. Obviously, water that's under pressure will not boil at 212 degrees like it would on an open pan, so you can run an engine a little bit warmer, but that's why a radiator cap has pressure against it. Its idea is to seal the water so that it doesn't start percolating too early, and then, of course, it reduces its ability to travel through the engine and to dissipate heat.
So your philosophy on this is changing it every, what, 50 to 60?
I would say 60 to 70,000 is about where I'm at.
And the reason is, mm-hmm. is because you said the chemicals within today's coolants develop eventually into,
it's almost like a silica sand. Okay. Yes. It's a byproduct that's just, I don't feel like is healthy to the coolant system of the engine. And they've changed a lot of the radiators now, of course, and have been for several years, are aluminum and not copper like they used to be. And they are just the holes inside the radiator, the passageways for the coolant to go through, are not very big. And I just believe that because of the very nature of what coolant does and this byproduct that is left behind, which I've seen evidence of time and time again, you know that that's got to be going through the water pump. That's not healthy on the bearings of a water pump. So my theory is you get it flushed out 60 to 70,000 miles, you get fresh coolant in there, and then there's an additive, which is just a lubricating additive, that you can put in there that lubricates the water pump. Doesn't have to lubricate anything else, just the water pump. But doing that keeps the coolant system operating normal.
One word you just said, flush and then fill. Difference between just draining and changing it out,
that is
and
correct.
Flushing. To explain that.
Well, when you do just a drain and refill, you only get what's in the radiator. You may get a little bit out of the block, the engine block, but you're not going to get a lot of it. In addition to that, some of the coolants that are out there or radiators that are out there now don't even have a drain valve at the bottom. And so what the flushing machine does is it actually basically does a transfusion. So you hook it up to the upper and lower radiator hoses, and then you actually force new antifreeze back through the engine and force the old out back into the machine so that it can be recycled. And so there is a complete difference in doing that. By getting all new coolant within the system, it gets rid of more of the dirt within the system, and it also allows you to circulate the lubricant through the system.
With that silica sand, is that something that eventually could cause engine failure?
Major
damage anyway.
Yeah, I believe that it would reduce the efficiency of it, is what I think. Mm-hmm. I think what it does more than anything is it causes premature failure of radiators and water pumps. And, you know, then what happens when you lose a water pump, your engine overheats, And then that's where engine damage comes from. So I would say that within the block of the engine, the coolant passages that are in there are probably not going to be affected. But the ancillary things, the radiator, the thermostat housing, and the water pump are going to be affected.
Myron Miller, Fleet Superintendent, City of Galesburg, joining us this morning. We're talking car maintenance. If you've got a question for us, call us up at 342-9194. I should say if you have a question for Myron, because I will tell you, put gas in it and turn the key on. That's all I can tell you. But we'll take your questions again at 342-9194. Wanted to talk a little bit about brakes. Obviously, another product with everything else, with technology and everything, have gotten better over the years.
Oh, yeah.
With newer technology, do they actually last any longer, or does that depend on how a person, their driving habits?
You know, that's a loaded question, and you actually asked it the perfect way, Tom. It depends on people's driving habits, but it is different than it used to be for a number of different things. First of all, weight. They have consistently reduced the weight of vehicles. They've done it through everything, crumple zones within the body of the vehicle, as well as composite materials used in the transmission, in the engine, everything, suspension system. So you're obviously the less inertia or the less weight, the less inertia that you have to slow down. Number two, yes, they have continued to improve the braking material within brake pads. The old days was asbestos, and then it went to semi-metallic. It still is semi-metallic, but there's ceramic that are available also, which is good for heat dissipation. That is the one killer for brakes mostly, is building up heat, because when brakes get too hot, they fade. Your braking ability then is reduced. They've also increased the size of wheels, so they've been able to put bigger brake rotors on it, so that increases in it. But it still has to do with somebody deciding to stop early or late.
Right. Well, we'll talk more about that coming up. Got a call here this morning. Let's go ahead and take this. Good morning. You're on with Myron. Do you have a question?
Hey, Tom. Myron. It's Dave Dunn.
Hey, Dave.
I can't hear anything.
Oh, okay. Put your
headphones on, Myron.
He's actually got them on. Let me find the right switch here, Dave.
I'll just fill some dead air here while you're looking real quick, Tom. Let's see what... I'm not able to hear the caller. You bear with me, caller,
right,
for just a minute.
Can you hear me yet, Myron? I feel like I'm on a phone commercial. Can you hear me now?
I can. No, not yet. I can't.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's okay. We'll
I'm gonna just put it on
speaker. We'll make it that work.
Okay. Sorry.
We can do that.
That is not. Sorry about that, Dave. I actually have him sitting where you were sitting the other day, so I'm gonna shut the mics off so he can hear your question. Dave Dunn, Myron.
Hey, Myron. How's it going?
Good, Dave. How are you?
Good. Serious question, even though I've already sent Tom a humorous photo. We struggle a little bit with older car carburation. In other words, if you go back to when I was a kid, everybody knew how to work on a carburetor a little bit. And as fuel injection systems have become prominent and so on, and standard old carburetors, you know, people still have some older cars. I have an old mid-80s van that has a carburetor. I have a friend who just asked me the other day about his 57 Chevy, who it's a quite a nice car. But he said, you know, do you have anybody that can work on a carburetor? Because, you know, younger guys have never seen a carburetor, really. You got any thoughts on that?
I will tell you that it is next to impossible to find somebody to work on carburetors in Galesburg anymore. It is a dying art, Dave, and I suffer that same concern. Now, the good news is for the city, for example, we only own one or two things that are left with the carburetor other than small equipment. But you about have to Google somebody to find, and I want to be careful that I don't speak out of school to injure anybody's reputation in Galesburg, because I'd mean no harm by that. But to find somebody that can accurately work on a carburetor is getting tougher and tougher to do. And so what is happening a lot now is that there are shops that specialize in it. So they have you take the carburetor off, send it to them, and when you get it back, it's a plug and play. I know yeah, there's a man. There it works. I can hear now.
I figured it out finally.
I know there's a man down in Arkansas that you can send carburetors to, and when you get them back, you can bolt them down, and they're ready to go. So it's a lost art, Dave.
you know, just hoping somebody locally would be able to do it. Like, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we all worked on carburetors, but then we ended up taking the mechanic to get them right anyway. But
yeah.
But today, it's almost like when you take something to a small mechanical shop, say, sure, I can work on a carburetor. It comes back running no better than it did. So
yeah,
probably that plug-and-play idea is the right one.
Huh? It is. And the prices have come down a lot on those, some of those more common carburetors like you would have in your older van. Those are not as expensive as they used to be, because they are doing it from a standpoint of send me yours, I'll send you back one that's completely rebuilt and ready to go. So that's really the best advice that I feel like is the best thing to do.
Oh, great. Well, good advice. And just a little plug. Thanks a lot for what you've always done for us with your volunteering for various community auctions and so on that I roped you into. I know I appreciate it, and our community really appreciates it too.
Dave, as well as you, you've put in a lot more than I have, but I tease people anytime that I have the opportunity to be able to talk fast, I love to do it.
Well, and the great thing, Dave mentioned, he sent me a picture, Myron. Oh, this is from the fundraiser for the Child Advocacy a fundraiser, and it's a picture of you and Mr. Robbie Dunn standing next to each other. There's just a slight difference.
Yeah, you know what? I can comfortably touch Robbie's navel with my nose.
Are you sure that's comfortable for both of you?
That's quite a picture.
You were the only person in the room who was comfortable with that.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a funny picture. All right, thanks.
Hey, Dave, thanks for calling this morning. Appreciate it. Have a great day. Yeah. So and that, you know, that's one of the things that you talk about the technology, and that it's even funny. You look at the Indianapolis 500, all the prelims and all that, they still have what they call Carburation Day, even though none of those cars have a carburetor. But that's just the name, and I guess at that time you're getting out there running wide open, and based on that they adjusted the carburetors, I guess, for race day. Is that
They did, and they had to do so based on even things like the barometric pressure. I mean, it sounds goofy, but that can change. And obviously, carburation is something that changes the higher elevation you go. And today's cars with the fuel economy or with the fuel injection system and the electronic monitoring they have, they do that automatically. So if you're driving up Pike's Peak, you don't have to think about it. The old carbureted cars barely make it up there because they had a thinner air. And always remember that the optimum. This is a factoid that probably means nothing to 90% of the people that are listening. But the optimum air-fuel ratio in a vehicle is 15:1. So that's 15 parts of air to one part of fuel. That's what makes an engine run best. And despite what they do with engines now, that ratio is still the standard. Now, obviously, that goes down a lot. It would be maybe 12 parts of air to one part of fuel for a race engine. Mm-hmm. But for the cars driving up and down the road, it's basically 15 parts of air to one part of fuel.
Talk more about carburetors coming up as well. It's 8:49. It's Galesburg Live. Our guest is Myron Miller, our Ask the Expert Hour. And if you've got a question about car maintenance, 342-9194.
David Stuckel, owner.